Ladies and gentlemen, we are speaking to you from the grand ballroom of the Hotel Plaza in New York City, where a dinner is being tendered the leading authors from 30 countries who are attending the World Congress of Writers at the World's Fair the past 3 days. This Congress has been held under the auspices of the American PEN Club. And here in the grand ballroom of the Hotel Plaza, its formal sessions are coming to a close with this dinner. The purpose of this broadcast is to bring you the addresses of the principal speakers. Those from whom we shall have the pleasure of hearing are Carl Van Doren, recent Pulitzer Prize winner, Nora Wallen, Erica Mann, Pearl Buck, Lin Yutang, and Jules Romain. We now present the president of the American Center of the PEN Club, Dorothy Thompson.
For the benefit of our foreign guests, perhaps I ought to say that he is a writer of books and a critic of books and an editor of books. He also belongs to a quite prolific literary family. Miss Dorothy Parker once said that she put herself to sleep counting Van Dorens. Mr. Carl Van Doren, who will open this program, has been the literary editor of The Nation and of The Century, and is at present editor of the Literary Guild. He's a translator, he is a very distinguished critic, and he is the author of a number of books, among them the Pulitzer Prize for the Best Biography, the biography of Benjamin Franklin. I take great pleasure in introducing Mr. Carl Van Doren.
Generalissimo, ladies and gentlemen, having written a very long book, I shall make a very short speech. There's a question whether books can be too long, but there's no question that speeches can't be too short. In order to make this as short as possible, I have written it out, and I shall read it, I hope, not too fast. Writers are masters of words, and words may at any time become masters of men. This is a good time for the writers of the world to consider what words mean when they say, as they say every day in a thousand places, that a new barbarism threatens mankind. You have heard those words. That statement by itself says both too much and too little. Mankind has always been under the living threat of barbarism. As those ancient contemporaries, the Chinese and Greeks, profoundly understood, war has always threatened peace. Anger has always threatened goodwill. Cruelty has always threatened humanity. Passion has always threatened wisdom. The arts have had to grow on dangerous ground. To say that a new barbarism threatens is to say too much by implying that this barbarism is more new than it is. To say that is also to say too little, because it assumes that the century between the Napoleonic Wars, for example, and the World Wars were an age without barbarism. But it was an age of raiding imperialisms, of merciless colonizing, of greedy exploitation of subject races abroad, and of unprivileged classes at home. These actions were then not called barbarism for the reason that they fell into an accepted pattern of behavior for European and American governments. They were barbarism in any large view of international or national justice. The countries and classes which then suffered have been too much accustomed to such treatment to fear, perhaps, as the overwhelming difference between it and what is now happening. I have the wrong glasses. The countries and classes which did not suffer during that century call it a happy age, and already begin to look back upon it with longing. They are short-sighted now, as they were short-sighted then. Complacent comparisons cannot serve any longer. Whatever the pressing emergency of 1939, and whatever may be demanded against the barbarism which undoubtedly threatens, as it always does, men of knowledge and wisdom must bear in mind that those older barbarisms have left deep marks upon the people. We cannot successfully fight new violence and selfishness without acknowledging the old ones. Barbarism is not an episode. It is a powerful thread running black and evil through history. The masters of words writing and speaking against barbarism must admit the past of barbarism, must perceive the present of barbarism, and prophesy against its future.
I cannot say in introducing the next speaker that she is a typical American or a typical American writer, because her gifts are so far beyond the range of most American writers, and her career has been so much more dazzling that that would be untrue. And yet I think of her as a very representative American, as indeed a very American American. First of all, she represents to me, at least, an example of the persistence of the American nonconformist character, which has survived every conceivable thought of change in our social order, and which is perhaps the most representative thing about us. We are a race of nonconformists. And secondly, I think she's representative in the fact that, being so American, she has spent a great deal of her time and her life outside of her own country, and has nevertheless succeeded in being quite as American as when she went away, in spite of the enormous enrichment and deepening of her experience. You've probably guessed whom I'm introducing. I'm introducing this year's Nobel Prize winner, Mrs. Pearl Buck. I take great pleasure in introducing her to this audience.
For once, I have a speech to make which I am thoroughly going to enjoy making. It is simply this: to introduce to you the new tongue. That's my sole function. The new tongue and I have been playing for a good many years this game of introducing each other. I think I'm a little ahead of him, at least in this country, but he has done his fair share of introducing me too. Tonight, he said, please try to kill me off in as few minutes as you can. I first knew Lin Yutang. Well, I didn't really know him. I just saw something in a very small, rather cheap-looking paper in China, which began to be issued in English. But it was by Chinese, the first paper that was issued in English by the modern Chinese. Well, some of it was pretty good, but I used to skip a good deal of it. But I found myself never skipping a certain small section in the back, which was called The Little Critic. I can't tell just when I began to see those little essays, very sharp, very short, always humorous, and always touching something very vital in modern Chinese affairs, and always bringing a peculiar point of view to bear upon that thing. It interested me because he was always saying something he shouldn't. He always has, and he always will. He was completely fearless, that little critic, and I knew that some of the things he was saying at that time must be, and really, almost endangering his life. It wasn't a time of free speech. There was a great deal of censorship of the most unpleasant sort, which was so final that your head usually went with it, or could go with it. But he kept straight on, and after a while I began to ask, who is this little critic? And somebody said, oh, it's a man in Shanghai named Lin Yutang. But I never thought I'd see him, and I never thought much further than that. But one day I did meet him, living in a very modest, comfortable little house on the outskirts of Shanghai. And at his luncheon table, I think it was, he said in the most casual sort of fashion, after talking about some books that other people have been trying to write about China. You know, I think I'll write about China myself someday. I'd like to write a book just about how I feel about my own country. And I was very enthusiastic and said, do, who better than you? And that was the beginning, as far as I know it, of my country and my people. I've known Lin Yutang a long time, but a good deal has happened to him since that first meeting. But I think he's just the same person that he ever was. He doesn't seem to spend any more money. He doesn't seem to have acquired any new taste, except he's had to learn to smoke a pipe because he can't get the cigars, the cigarettes, whatever it was he smoked in China. Otherwise, he's just about the same. He seems to speak about us fearlessly. He's always been used to censorship, but he knows how to get around censorship. He knows how to say those things which the censors aren't quite sure whether or not he should say, but they're not quite sure that he shouldn't say them. And so there he lives a quite comfortable life in one country or another. I know he enjoys what's come to him, but he doesn't enjoy it too much. But tonight I don't want to speak about Lin Yutang, the writer, because everybody knows him. And I don't want to even speak about Lin Yutang, the man, because there are three little Lins who have done that much better than I can in a book entitled Our Family. But I'd like to speak about Lin Yutang, the Chinese. He has a very acute humor. As I say, he's written under censorship until he has developed that humor really to a point of perfection. And that's one valuable thing about censorship that nobody seems to mention. But I assure you that it does develop a sense of humor. And that is amazing. At the same time, he has written a book that not many Americans know about, A History of the Press and Public Opinion in China, which is one of the most brilliant things of that sort, I'm sure, that's ever appeared in any language. And it gives an insight into the whole matter of censorship, which is extremely valuable. This Chinese, I may tell you, is a very genial fellow. He can be most fearfully in earnest, but without seeming to be at all serious. But he is serious. He is patriotic to the core of this Chinese. He spends himself for his country in all sorts of ways, spends what he is and spends what he has. And yet, I remember once going to a foreign policy luncheon here in this city, and there was a Japanese who was to speak with him. If some of you were there, perhaps, and this Chinese, mind you, he said, after he had made his little speech, which was a terrific speech in the most gentle voice, and he turned to the Japanese and said with his charming and gentle smile, "You know, I hate you." Sometimes he is a propagandist, but I tell you, he seems to have somehow struck that happy point of, you know, we argue so much, and rightly I know, as to how much propaganda should be a part of what we write. Well, somehow, propaganda is a part of what he writes, and yet he never gives himself over to it entirely. He throws himself into a piece of propaganda, if that propaganda or that cause is a part of his life, and never otherwise. I don't think he lives in an ivory tower, because I can't imagine any true Chinese living in an ivory tower. In the first place, they're too much interested in people and what's going on. At the same time, they do hate a fight, and that is necessary. And so he has found a place where he may live, near enough and yet far enough, and that seems to be the place, after all, where truth appears, or at least where truth survives. I'm very happy to introduce to you Lin Yutang of China.
Friends and guests of the Pen Club, I thought my friend Pearl Buck was going to kill me in 5 minutes. Well, she hasn't quite killed me yet. I'm still alive. Before I go on with what I want to say, I want to make a confession about myself. You know, many people have come to shake hands with me, say, oh, I love your book and all that sort of stuff. And one very dear friend of mine made this wonderful tribute to me. He said, you know your book, I can lay it down any time. Now that is my ambition in life. There are other writers who have written books which once you take up in your hand, you can never lay down again. I want to write books that you can lay down at any point. Whether you can pick it up at any point or not, that remains to be ascertained yet. I like to write a novel without a plot, or a drama without a climax, or denouement. Well, I'm on this subject about this thing called myself. I may just as well tell you another ambition of mine. I want to write a book that rambles on and on, there's no end to it. That's why I told you I wanted to write that kind of book. It is my ambition to write a bedside book that would find its way somehow or other into the bedchamber of a beautiful lady and put her to sleep and give her sweet dreams. People have asked me, you preach on the art of being lazy, of lying in bed. Now you seem to be one of the hardest workers. I say, yes, I try to live up to what I preach, but every time I live up to what I preach, I have a guilty conscience. My professor in Harvard, that was years ago, used to speak about a man, I don't know whether it's Bossuet or Malzerbe, you know, one of the French early people, who said there was a man who preached the importance of silence in 30 volumes. I want to speak to tell you about Chinese dictators, because this is a subject that is most obvious in our minds. I know that you have dictators, but we had better dictators in China. Somehow it is our fortune or misfortune to have everything that you have had. You have new dealers, and we have new dealers too. We had even anti-new dealers. Now, in particular, I want to tell the story about a eunuch. And I hope from the story of that great dictator eunuch, oh, by the way, do you realize that eunuchs make very good dictators? Because they are so moral, they are so superhuman, they are above the temptations of women. They never suffer from a hangover. Now this great eunuch, great tyrant, terrific fellow, was a great eunuch. Probably the greatest eunuch of Asia. And since Asia alone produced eunuchs, if I'm historically correct, probably the greatest eunuch of all time. I want to bring you a message of comfort. We have had a few dictators in Chinese history. And statistically, I've tried to figure out how long exactly a eunuch lasts. Or a dictator lasts. It is exactly somewhere around 16 years. Now this eunuch came about the 16th century and ran up against one of the greatest Chinese literary movements for public criticism, There were fearless intellectuals, writers, who went against him. There were plenty of men ready to be martyrs. But the more martyrs there were, the more he shut them down, or rather killed them, chopped off their heads. And for a time, the eunuch was really supreme. The history of the torture of those scholars makes a most ghastly tale, comparable even to the concentration camps in modern Germany.
We bring to a close this broadcast, which came to you direct from the grand ballroom of the Hotel Plaza in New York City, where a dinner is being held in honor of well-known literary figures from 30 foreign countries, famous foreign authors who are now visiting the United States. Tonight's dinner brings to a close the formal sessions of the World Congress of Writers, held at the New York World's Fair for the past 3 days under the auspices of the American PEN Club. On tonight's broadcast, the Toastmaster was Dorothy Thompson, well-known political writer and president of the American Center of the PEN. The speakers introduced to you were Carl Van Doren, Pearl Buck, and the present speaker, Lin Yutang. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.